You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM. My name is John Malkin, and the name of this program is The Great Leap Forward. You can hear this show every Wednesday night right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. Free Radio Santa Cruz is commercial-free, collectively run, and has been operating without a license from the U.S. government since 1995. And this program is dedicated to exploring social change and spirituality, compassion, and anarchism. And this evening we will be talking about the University of California and UCSC and recent changes, budget cuts, and fee hikes that have been decided upon by the UC Regents, and then the protests and responses to some of these changes. And I'm very happy to have in the studio here with me this evening, Mark. And on the telephone is Vanessa, and then later we will be hearing from Don. And Mark, I want to welcome you warmly to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
It's a real pleasure to be on with you all. Thank you so much for having me.
And Vanessa on the phone, welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Mark, for being there.
I'd like to start just by hearing from the two of you what your role is at UCSC. Are you students or graduate students? Mark, you can go ahead.
I'm a graduate student. This is my second year at UCSC. I've kind of been all over the United States, and it's sort of unfortunate yet fortuitous time to be at UCSC right now.
And Vanessa?
I'm an undergraduate student. This is my first year, and I find it an incredible privilege to be part of this movement, even though it is a struggle. I find it also exciting to be a part of.
So tell me, maybe Mark can start off by describing somewhat the recent events that have sparked protests, some little history of the UC system and the recent decisions by the UC Regents.
Well, first off, it's more than just the course of the last week that has led to this. It's been a very steady increase in the money that the Regents and the UCs take directly out of the pockets of California students and parents. This has begun to build and culminate over the course of the last year. There have been strikes. There have been votes of censure for Mark Udoff. There were some occupations to start the year off. There was a mass walkout at all the UC campuses with solidarity walkouts in the some Cal states and some community colleges throughout California. It was sparked this course in the course of this last week on Wednesday when the Regents of California, the University of California, and Mark Udoff decided that a 32% tuition hike is an appropriate measure to take in addressing the current state of California education. This led to mass protests throughout the state of California. On the UC Santa Cruz campus, we met at the Bay Tree bookstore, in front of the bookstore. There was about 400 to 500 students, who, including staff and faculty, who met. We heard updates to the vote as to whether or not this 32% would be proposed. It was proposed. The students took to the streets. We marched down to the base of campus. We blocked off traffic. Thank you to the UC police department for helping us block off traffic. We were trying to explain how the workings of the University of California have for a long time been messed up, for a long time have been more than just inconveniencing people, but have been destroying the lives of many hundreds, many thousands of Californians. At the base of campus, through a democratic process wherein everyone has a chance to speak and then vote, it was decided that we would like to occupy a space on campus in the interest of having a permanent organizing space. The UCSC charges students anytime they congregate to plan on anything, to dialogue on anything. We would be charged $400 to $500. The students felt that this, on top of the other fee increases, was a terrible decision, and we were asserting our right to be in the university system. From there, we occupied Kresge Town Hall on Wednesday night. On Thursday, we had a general assembly. It was proposed that an occupation of an administrative building occur. We decided in the course of the march that Kerr Hall, named after the man who proposed the California Master Plan for Education in 1960, which advocated a free or affordable public education for all California residents, we decided to occupy that administrative building to disrupt the day-to-day functions of the university. Again, the day-to-day functions of the university we feel have been disrupted way more than this over the course of the last 30 years. This is a spike, and it's going a spike that will continue. The students then occupied Kura Hall with numbers anywhere from 75 to 400 at different times of the days, from Thursday morning until the SWAT team arrived at around 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning on Sunday. From there, the students were given the choice of coming out and having all their names taken, their ID cards taken, as well as other possessions. The students and faculty and staff said, no, we do not accept that choice. They said, okay, well, if you leave in 12 minutes, then we will not take your names, we will not take your IDs, and they actually said that there would be no repercussions as far as the civil arena is concerned. Obviously, with student judicial, we have no rights up on campus. That's a very different matter. And now they're trying to say that the students might be held accountable in the eyes of the law, even though, as the police articulated, there would be no repercussions. We would be given amnesty in that moment. We went back to Kresge Hall. The provost there, Juan Poblete, has been fantastic and amazing. We continue to have this space as a permanent organizing space. And now the students have started figuring out ways to increase this movement. We've received solidarity calls, solidarity letters, and emails from all over the United States, all over the world. And as a movement that is just beginning, I'm actually getting chills a little bit right now. It's fantastically amazing the way that students, faculty, staff, and community came together to protest, not just protest, but say that we are here, we exist, and you must take us seriously. You must listen to us.
Thanks, Mark. Let's hear just a short clip of audio from, I think it was from Wednesday, November 18th, just recently, when the rallies began and the occupations were beginning to happen at UCSC. Is that right?
I think this clip was actually from Friday, after the first full night of the occupation at Kerr Hall. Various faculty and students got up to speak, and I believe that this clip is a bilingual address from a staff member.
And then we'll hear from Vanessa. Thanks for hanging on there, Vanessa. So Vanessa, I wonder if you'd be willing to say a little bit about what is inspiring you to be involved in the political actions that are happening at the university regarding the UC system and fee hikes and the privatization of the University of California system?
To just go back on that YouTube video, there's another one with the actual bilingual address if you'd like to pull that up. It's on the same account. But as far as your question goes, the reason why I was attracted to it within the last couple weeks and why I am now involved is because I saw so much. I was inspired by the graduate students. They said that we're not, that everyone's a leader. And if you want to do an action for this movement, you should take the self-initiative to do it. We're at a threshold where this can be the new way of running an organization. It's not from the bottom or from the top down, but everyone really steps forth and does what they need to do to make the movement go forward. I just was so inspired by that and by the nonviolence of the movement. At UC Santa Cruz, we're all about negotiations and organization and having the mass of the students having a consensus in the meetings, and we want a unity in our mission. That's what I've experienced over the past couple weeks.
Thanks, Vanessa.
Yeah.
Tell me, Vanessa and Mark, about the police activities there that you witnessed. I know at UC Berkeley now there is some review of police brutality that happened when Wheeler Hall was occupied around the same time that occupations were happening here at UCSC. Some people said that there were overtly aggressive police tactics at UC Berkeley. What was the level of police violence this past week during these protests, rallies, and occupations here at UCSC? You can go ahead, Vanessa.
Okay, perhaps I'm not the best person to speak of this because I wasn't present for the police brutality when they actually came, but from speaking with my friends who were in solidarity and present at the time, they came in a bus and they came with menacing gear and they wanted to be intimidating. They came with a dog and their goal, I suppose, was to divide and conquer the group, which was outside Care Hall. During the whole time that they were trying to intimidate the students were singing peaceful songs of solidarity, and they were holding their hands in the air with peace signs. We had our study books in our laps, and we were studying our books in between times of the police pushing the crowd. And an image the students gave, which actually made some police members cry during their raid. And my friends, when they tell me this, they get very emotional, and it's quite an image that I wish I could have been there for.
Yeah, I think that as far as the police violence that was exhibited at Berkeley and at UCLA, Santa Cruz was nowhere near to that extent. There was some use of batons. Some people do have bruising. But I would really like to go back to this police crying, because I think that's really powerful. The students were chanting, "We're doing this for your children." And the police in Santa Cruz are actually some of the lowest paid police in California. They make very little. Their children are not going to be able to afford to go to a UC. There's a good chance they might not be able to afford to go to a Cal State. And we already know that there's too many people are being turned away from community colleges due to budget slashings there, that the prospect of their children receiving an education is somewhat dim for a lot of people, not just cops, but for everyone in the community of Santa Cruz. Well, maybe not everyone in the community of Santa Cruz, a lot of people in the community of Santa Cruz. It's a remarkable thing when you see the effect that this has on everyone. It's not the administration of the UC will try to set this off as something no one cares about, that it's a disruption. Like, we can go into what disruption and all the vandalism and whatnot a later time tonight. But for right now, I think it's really important to emphasize that this is something that everyone in California is affected by. This is something that, as much problems we have ideologically and physically, even with police and with people of that nature, it affects everyone. It's something that everyone is going to be dealing with for a really, really, really long time.
My name is John Malkin, and this is The Great Leap Forward. You are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM. And in the studio this evening is Mark, and on the phone is Vanessa. Mark is a graduate student, and Vanessa is an undergrad student at UCSC, and they have been involved in this past week's nonviolent civil disobedience actions and rallies regarding recent and historical events at UC and with the UC Regents. I was a student at UCSC in 1991 and 92. I was a community studies student, and I focused on helping to create a police review board for the city of Santa Cruz, which did become a board, and I sat on that board, and I later resigned from the board. But at that time, 91, 92, I was surprised to learn a couple things about UC. Then the UC system was the manager of the nuclear weapons labs of the United States. The nuclear weapons that were being designed in this country, that was being managed by UC. They later lost that because of mismanagement, not because they decided it wasn't a good idea. So, you know, that's surprising. In recent days, I've learned other things about the UC system. I mean, it seems like the UC system would be set up to deliver education widely. And it really is, in a lot of ways, a privatized corporation that makes investments, expects returns on investments it makes, some of that having nothing to do with education at all. And my understanding is about 13%, I think, of the funding for UC comes from the state, and the rest comes from other money-making ventures. I wonder if you have more to say about that realm of UC, the privatization, corporatization of education.
I think that first off, it would be really important for all the listeners to understand that the regents, the ones who make decisions for the UC system, almost all of them come from a corporate background. We have former heads of Wachovia. We have former heads of Newbridge Capital, Macar Properties, Essex Property Trust, Pegasus Capital Advisors, et cetera, et cetera. These are the men and women who decide how funds are allocated in the UC system, that decide that tuition needs to be raised, that decide on the shape and the texture of a university education. It shouldn't be surprising to any of us that with a board made up of members of the corporate elite, that they would be making decisions based more on the privatization and the private wealth of a few rather than the public good of all. This 32% fee increase that did just pass, of that money, we can guesstimate that very little of it will be going towards paying for education at any of the UCs. Already, our libraries aren't open on Saturday. We've had to lay off lecturers. The budgets for TAs are being slashed. The community studies program is losing faculty members. Other programs are about to lose faculty members. There's no money to hire new faculty members. staff, there's not enough staff to adequately take care of the campus. And yet they continue to put most of the money from tuition into construction, new construction, and bond measures. And they use the tuition. They can't use state funds to back up bonds, but they can use tuition as collateral for bonds. So there is a never-ending supply of collateral so that the university can continue to raise funds in order to do construction and in order for different construction companies and different bond companies, capital companies to make a killing, to make a ton of money, for banks to basically run and dictate how the University of California structures itself, where its finances go, and how it should view the future. There's a Bob Meister, who's in the politics department of UCSC, has written a series of amazing articles exposing all of this. They're not super complex. They're really plain, but they lay the whole process out. If you are interested, please go to, and I'll wait a second while people perhaps get pens or whatnot, www.cucfa.org/news/tuition_bonds.php. There's a series of articles that he written that lay bare the whole facade of education as the prime goal of the university system.
Yeah, it's so surprising that it's not the prime goal of the UC system. Something else that I encountered when I was a student at UCSC was the idea that maybe the campus is so beautiful. I just find it so amazingly connected to nature. That is really, it makes it wonderful to go to school there. And a lot of the buildings are designed to fit into nature. Some of them are not. They are smaller and decentralized. There's essentially a bunch of little campuses, which makes it really pleasant. But I have heard the idea that it was designed that way specifically to dissuade student organizing in situations just like this, or in situations where students are wanting to stop an international war by protesting somewhere centrally. And you mentioned earlier the problems with finding a place to do on-campus organizing. Tell me, Mark, more about the importance of democratic participation at school, and maybe even in terms of UC. I think that there's one student representative among the UC Regents, and that doesn't seem like a fair representation for the student body.
Yeah, the students, faculty, and staff find it strange that the Regents view themselves as paternalistic figures who make rulings and decisions about, honestly, the rest of our lives. If we're being saddled with debt, it would cost $12,000 on top of the $12,000 to go to school, on top of the $16,000 a year that it costs to just live in Santa Cruz, that it costs about $30,000, $28,000 just to go to school. The higher up administration and the Regents show no interest whatsoever in engaging in any sort of democratic process. They view the students, to quote Mark Udoff, as corpses or as vandals. Anytime students want to protest, we get absolutely no response. We use petition drives, we do protests, we do marches, we do solidarity strikes. We do phone banks. We engage in all of that. We vote. We engage in all of the, we engage in all of the prescribed means of having a voice that we are told, you go out and do this and your voice is going to be heard. But nothing ever happens. Things continue to get worse for us. The students have spontaneously said, we are not going to take this anymore. We do have a voice. We will be seen. We will be heard. And there's nothing you can do to stop that. A decentralized campus with no central hub, that's not going to stop us. We're going to take a building if we have to. That's not the only thing we're doing. We'll go back to the other forms that we have. But in order to even begin to have a voice in this, we need to do something to show that students do have power. Students have something to say, and students can model democracy. Every decision that was made over the course of this last week was made by students in a democratic process where any student who felt they had something to say was given an opportunity, was encouraged to speak. Those who have been speaking a lot, who have more of a sway within the group, are encouraged to look at the participation and gauge your participation in that way. And then votes are taken. The vote's not the end of it, though. If there is a really close decision, there's more deliberation. There's trying to figure out how we can make the other side, like the side that didn't get the vote passed, like how we can engage them. Because we don't think that the tyranny of the majority is a way to rule. We don't think that representative democracy, in which one person becomes responsible for the viewpoints of 1,000 or 1,000,000 people, is a way to really have a voice for the people. We think that there's no accountability in the current system of representative democracy, and we have been modeling something new. The whole point of what we're doing is that there is a different and a better way to have a democracy. There is a different and a better way to have a University of California public education system. This is just the beginning. We're still in the growing pain stages of it. Things aren't always going to go the way that we hope they're going to go, but that's what democracy is. That's what the founding fathers, these mythical men, that's what they understood. That, like, if you look back at the history of the United States, its constitution was forged over many long years, starts and trials and fits and errors. Nothing that is forged, that is liberatory, comes out completely clean. There is a birthing process that involves pain, that involves missteps. But the important thing is that the more people who join us, the more people who have their voices heard, the more people who do speak, the better this democracy is going to look. And we've seen that over the course of the last 2 months, that as more people get involved, as more people have something to say, and in fact do say that, the tenor and shape of the movement has changed, and it's grown, and it's been remarkable to watch the ways that students, faculty, and staff are joining together to make the university better. If not now, in the future, we definitely will, and definitely are.
I appreciate a lot hearing about the commitment to something that's better than the representative democracy that people often associate with the freest, best system for making choices. I feel dedicated to that as well. So I appreciate that you value that so much, and that people in this movement are valuing that so much. Mark, and maybe we can hear from Vanessa about this a little bit. Some of the imagery that came from this past week's occupations at the University of California in Davis, at UCLA, UCSC, UC Berkeley, some of it included making connections between what's happening now with other nonviolent movements from the past and other occupations, nonviolent civil disobedience. There were some Native American people that came and supported occupations that were happening, and they noted that it's the 30-year anniversary of the occupation of Alcatraz. And at UCLA this past week, when Covell Commons was occupied, the students renamed it the Carter Huggins Hall after two Black Panthers. So maybe I can start with Vanessa and just hear from you the connection you feel to historical nonviolent movements in this country or elsewhere, and how that's affecting your participation at UCSC.
Yes, thank you, John. I can relate this movement that we're in right now to Tiananmen Square in China. It was one event with one student, and it affected social change in the entire country. And it's a framework that we can use for the world. It's true that that students died in that action, and it's true that students, but it was a non-violent action in general. It was from this one student who laid himself down in front of the tank that created change, and it's an incredible thing to look at as an individual, how much we can do, really, to change. I've been talking to all my friends and getting them involved, standing out in front of dining halls and passing out brochures, and I have also found that the campus's lack of a center for an organizing ground has greatly, harmed us in how we've organized, but at the same time, we're working around that, and I'm so glad that now we have gained the right to use a space for free, which is now Kresge Town Hall. So through history, I am inspired, and it makes me remember that although I'm fighting for my education in the future, I still have to stay present with my education now and attend classes and continue to be present with education for my children and for myself.
Thank you. And I appreciate you being willing to turn some of your energy and attention towards these issues at UCSC, because I know it's already a full-time thing being a student there.
Yeah.
And again, when I was a student at UCSC in 1991, my first quarter up there, unfortunately, what we have to now call the first Gulf War, began. And there I was in community studies talking about theory and practice of social change. And a lot of us said, we can't just go to school, even if we are going to talk about the war. So I immediately took a camera out of the social media lab, and I did an independent study and was really involved in the organizing against the war at that time. And I documented all of that and made a documentary video about it. Vanessa, I want to thank you so much for joining us on Free Radio Santa Cruz. I think we will try and get in touch with Don on the telephone, and we're going to continue talking with Mark. Thank you, Vanessa, for your actions and for being with us this evening.
Thank you so much. And can I just leave with one final image that our system is an old house that needs everything in it renewed and restored. Thank you.
Thank you, Vanessa.
That was great, Vanessa. I think that I appreciate also John bringing up the first Gulf War and the protests that went along with that, because the lineages of past protests definitely still haunt any sort of movement for social change in the United States. At the same time, the you could say failure of a lot of the past social movements, the failure of the recent Iraq war protests, the failure of healthcare reform protests, just in general, this destruction of any idea of a public sphere in which to debate what our government does, what our state does in our name, is something that we think about all the time. It's something that we knew when we tried to start doing protests, and we knew when we start trying to do petitions and phone banks, is that none of these things have seemed to work over the course of the last 40 years. We've tried them anyway. We keep trying to do these same things, and yet we've found that more radical action has actually brought a lot more people to the table and has said for the first time, we can actually have a say in what happens, and no architectural feat of spreading out a campus can stop students from joining together. It just actually provides an opportunity for a new form of organization, for a form of organization in which we can take a campus such as UCSC and make it work and make it even better than it was. And that's what our protest is trying to do. Our protest locates itself within a long line of protests going back to the 1930s, up through the 1960s, the early 70s, the 80s, the 90s, back to the World Forum, back to Seattle. But we think that the only way that we can actually do anything is by having as many people as possible join this movement. If the listeners can figure out ways that they too can join in this movement, like, that's what we need. It can't just remain students, and none of the students want it to remain just students. We all are desperately hoping that others from the community will join us. Otherwise, this movement's destined to fail like all the other ones. Only if everyone joins together is it even a possibility of thinking about change.
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. My name is John Malkin. This program is called The Great Leap Forward. And this evening I'm speaking with Mark, and we had Vanessa on the phone. We're talking about democratizing the UC system and recent protests and nonviolent actions that have happened at UCSC. And I want to warmly welcome Don to Free Radio Santa Cruz on the telephone there.
Hey there. How's everybody doing?
Good.
Good. Thanks. Thanks for being there. I know
No problem. No, hey, I heard Mark saying something. The trail end of Mark's comment. I just wanted to emphasize the inclusive nature and the larger vision that the students at UCSC have had throughout their actions over the course of the past week and beyond. And this is really underlined by the demands that the students chose to put forward when they occupied the administration building. And I don't know if anybody's gone over that yet.
No, I would like you to do that.
Well, it's key that these were not students demanding things that only affect students. These were demands and focuses of attention that really affect the community as a whole. Things like making sure that the lowest paid janitorial staff at UC Santa Cruz receive living wages, or at least have the rollback on their hours rescinded, so that they can hope to support their families. Things like making UCSC an immigration and custom enforcement free campus, so that the undocumented members of our community can feel safe, can work and study in peace without fear of arbitrary reprisal. These are the sorts of things that I think really show vision on the part of the students about not just the sort of UC that they want to live in or study in, but the type of world they actually want to live in. And that's something that warms my heart repeatedly.
Yeah, thank you. Mark, did you want to add some things about what students are asking to have happen at the University of California in Santa Cruz?
Yeah, a lot of resource centers, such as the Engaging Education, the Women's Resource Center, the Ethnic Resource Center, and others are having their budget slashed. There's a proposal that all of these different resource centers be brought under the auspices of one individual, as if that one individual could then rule over all of them and make decisions for all of them. We would like to make sure that does not happen and that they actually receive funding in order to continue out their purpose. The rent in family student housing exceeds that of the operating costs for families up there. There isn't affordable child care for students who are going to school who have families. Layoffs are still happening all over the campus, and that's something that has a wide effect on all of Santa Cruz, whether it's the tax money that goes into Santa Cruz or whether it's the ability of those who had jobs to make purchases in the city of Santa Cruz. These are all things that affect everyone. We're still searching for ways to bring the whole community in, and we very much welcome community involvement or community ideas on how we can add their voice to our voice, how we can add our voice to their voice.
Mark and Don, how involved and cooperative are some of the staff, administration, professors at UCSC with the protests? Don, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, this is Don. The immediate response on the part of staff, workers on campus and faculty people, was incredible. We had a large and rather spirited rally at the occupied administrative building on Friday, at which a large turnout from Ask Me showed up, as well as a number of professors speaking not only in support of the immediate action at Kerr Hall, but also, you know, telling their story, why they, in the words of one professor, had hoped something like this would happen. So in terms of the sort of the professors and the rank-and-file workers on campus, the support has been overwhelming. Administration has been much more like you would expect the administration to behave. You know, they have to, they have a particular set of rules and codes of conduct that they feel they, or that's their mandate to enforce, and that's what they've really been focused on. They take the disciplinarian role rather than seeing this as the opportunity that it is to work together to weather this storm and come out as an institution that's truly a public education, institution of public education.
Yeah, and you can
I think Mark or Vanessa has anything to add with that.
You can almost understand the administrator's reasons for doing that. I mean, obviously there aren't jobs in California with California unemployment reaching 12.5%, and that's using the Clintonian numbers. It would be higher if we were going back by the definition of unemployment from before Clinton. They would lose their job if they try to do what we want them to do. They're trying from within a broken system to make that system work. Unfortunately, we all recognize, and I hope that they recognize too, the system is broken for students. It doesn't seek the good for students, faculty, or staff. I spoke recently with a professor in earth sciences who teaches every year a course of 300 students. In every previous year, he's had between 8 and 10 TAs. This year, he has 2, and next year, he's going to get 1. It means he has to teach section, and his TA has a section of 200 students. So this affects every single person on the UC Santa Cruz campus. There are very few things that people in the UCSC administration right now can do about allocating funds differently. Those are decisions that are made through the regions, and those are decisions that are made through the state legislature. So we don't want to place all the blame for library closings on the library staff, because it's not their fault. Anything that they ask for has to be taken away from someone else, and it usually gets taken away from the resource centers. The pools of money that exist are always drawn from those who have the least already. We are asking for a fundamental change in the way the UC system allocates money, what it spends money on. We think that contracts with the janitorial and custodial staff can be broken and slashed, and the contracts with Lockheed Martin can be broken and slashed. If we think that there are no repercussions for destroying the contract, verbal and written contracts with graduate students promised TA ships and undergrads promised work study, then there should be, again, no repercussions for the UC going after these terrible contracts that we're involved in for construction. This is, again, a fundamental lack of understanding the situation on behalf of everyone who claims to be in charge of the situation.
I would like to hear from the two of you about the time of occupying Kerr Hall and how that was. But just to stay with what you're talking about for a moment longer, it seems so obvious from one angle how similar the situation is that you see with the situation in the country of slashing social services and yet funding at every turn war, the military machine. Are students interested in making these connections between the slashing of social services and also the national priorities of the country?
We recognize that everyone has to tighten their belt. Unfortunately for the rich, that means they have to tighten their belt because they're getting so fat off the profits they're making from the poor people. Poor people have to tighten their belt just to be able to go outside with a fresh pair of pants or even a dirty pair of pants. Rich people have to tighten their belts because the clothes that they have no longer fit because they've been making too much money. And students are definitely tying this. Students are thinking of the Chicago occupation over the summer, where the Chicago window workers were told, you no longer have a job. And they said, you know what? We don't believe that. We do have a job. We are going to occupy this space, and we're going to make this space work because we know that you're going to make more money from us not having a job than you are from us having a job. We, however, can't take that. Students are connecting this to deindustrialization throughout the United States. Students are connecting this to the broader struggles of undocumented workers, the exploitation of many hundreds of thousands, many millions of people. And again, we do not want to speak just for ourselves. We want to speak with everyone who is being destroyed by the current system.
Don?
I was just going to say yes. I mean, echoing everything Mark has said, one of the really exciting things that was happening in Kerr Hall, which, you know, even though it's a space on a public university, is actually, you know, quite unwelcoming to students when it's under its, you know, quote-unquote normal operations, was that, you know, one could see in the occupied space examples of students transforming that space into one in which they were able to teach themselves precisely about, and teach each other, I should say, precisely about these questions of national and global scope concerning the economy and the industrial war machine. So absolutely, they're making these connections and they're reaching out. There were some wonderful opportunities to Skype and have online conversations with students occupying buildings and at their universities in Austria and Germany during the occupation, both at Kerr Hall and I believe also at the library study in a few weeks ago. So absolutely, making connections not only with these lines of diagnosis and understanding the way in which the global capitalist system is restructuring right now off the backs of the poor, like Mark, I think, quite astutely pointed out, but also drawing lines of resistance that are global in scope. The, you know, the problem that we face is global, and the resistance is going to have to be equally global. And I think that the actions throughout the UC system, UC Santa Cruz, and in Europe are pointing, you know, we're seeing the seeds of something along the lines of a global resistance movement. Anecdotally, I received communication from a friend of mine in Venezuela, and there was a small solidarity march in the city of Maracay in solidarity with the occupation of Kerr Hall and denouncing the disproportionate use of police violence and UC ordered police violence throughout the state over the 17th, 18th, and 19th. So, yeah, I do believe absolutely that students are drawing these connections, and more importantly, asking what is to be done and setting having those conversations and making those plans.
So tell me more about the actual occupation and protests that were happening at UCSC these past days on the 18th, 19th, 20th. A couple things I'm interested in hearing about, but certainly don't confine your answer to these. How well media responded and covered what was happening? Did they cover it in a way that really represented what was happening? And I'd love to hear about discussions that happened regarding nonviolence or property damage and to what extent people would resist police and how committed people are to nonviolence and what kind of discussions ensued around that. And just the atmosphere and the attitude and how it unfolded, the occupation.
Yeah, well, I can speak real quickly to the media coverage, because it was really interesting and quite surprising that initially from the 17th up until about, immediately after the eviction of the occupiers on Sunday morning, the corporate media, the bourgeois media, actually was reporting quite fairly and quite sympathetically about not only the actions at UCSC, but also the actions throughout the state of California, because you know, everybody, I think, acknowledges just how absurd and obscene a 32% increase in fees and tuition is and how this will price out a large number of students. So initially, the corporate media was very sympathetic, surprisingly sympathetic. However, after the eviction of the students from Kerr Hall, it was a complete 180-degree turn. The corporate media immediately started reporting directly from the press release from the administration, which emphasized the ostensible or supposed acts of vandalism that occurred within Kerr Hall. And if you look at these pictures that the administration themselves chose to publish to press their case, you see, you know, yes, a broken table, yes, some unplugged wires, but you also see garbage on the floor and graffiti done in painter's tape. These were not the roving hordes of barbarian anarchists that the media so likes to talk about whenever there's some sort of summit protest. These were students who are very aware that, you know, if they're going to remake the university, they're not going to trash it in the process. The decision to put up barricades was one that was from what I understand, being privy to only part of that conversation, that reflected the overall democratic and inclusive manner, which means messy, that all decisions were made in the space. This really was a first-hand experience, learning experience for students in how democratic decision-making and group dynamics work. And the same goes to say for the decision around nonviolence. I think many of the students, I think it's safe to say, had an initial disposition going into this action for it to be nonviolent on our end. Of course, we always knew that there was a danger that we can be as nonviolent as we like, but the police normally don't, you know, hold up their end of the bargain, as they didn't when they showed up. But there was, you know, decisions made collectively on the correct response to the police, how arrests would go on our side of things should it have come up to that situation. And these decision making processes were all very inclusive, very very democratic, and in a way that it's not only heartening, you know, just to see these things when they happen, but also heartening because there is a whole new generation, hundreds of new activists learning by doing on campus the dynamics of group discussion. What it means to participate responsibly with your comrades, and also how to have solidarity with folks who you might not necessarily see eye to eye with 100% ideologically, or ideologically speaking, or in terms of one's relationship to a certain sort or set of tactics. I don't know if Mark has something to add on this.
Yeah, I usually do have things to add on, but I'll try to keep it brief. I think that the decision, I'd like to emphasize that the decision to barricade was one that was reached after multiple votes, many people expressing very eloquently what they think the positives and the negatives of barricades were. It wasn't something that was entered into lightly. It was, unfortunately, a quick decision that had to be made, since the administration that we thought we were engaging in negotiations with had told us that the cops were coming. We remembered from Berkeley the rubber bullets, the batons, the different gases that were used on students. And there was, I wouldn't say fear, because I don't think people necessarily were afraid of the cops and what they could do. But there was definitely a sense of trepidation about what the tactics would be on students. And in the past, when barricades have gone up, the police have often given second chances, like cutting through the barricade, giving an ultimatum, cutting through the barricade, and then giving another ultimatum. And that was what was hoped would happen in this case, and that's actually what did happen in this case. And I would like to say that, yes, there was vandalism. A few people did engage in acts of destruction, and some people didn't know they were engaging in acts of destruction. I think that some of the people who flipped over the refrigerator to use that as a bulwark maybe didn't know that refrigerators should not be flipped over, because that destroys them. So some of the stuff that was engaged was definitely does look bad. Also, once the barricades did go up, the normal outtake of trash that had been happening throughout the course of the occupation there was unable to happen. The normal sweeping was unable to happen. It became a command center of a different sort during that time. But I can't emphasize this enough. The damages are a tiny drop in the bucket compared with the damages done to the student staff in the entire state of California by the regents. It's not as if the administration of the UC system likes to make it out like these acts are what are crippling the UC system. The students flat out don't believe that. We reject that as a lie. We think that that is misinformation that totally directs the issue away from the blame that they share, the blame that they shoulder, and that we find cowardly and appalling, and a very, very poor model of how to be a human being in this world.
Don and Mark, you both return to the matter of democratic participation and discussion and the messiness of coming to decisions with groups of people and how that is inherent with groups. And I just want to plug a book that has been on my mind lately. It's a book that I read 10 years ago, but I have picked it up again lately, and I've been telling people about it because it's precisely on this matter. It's called Taking the Risk Out of Democracy, and it's about this notion that people think that they can control democratic conversations. And in fact, I mean, they do. People with money and people with violence, they end up controlling democracies when, in fact, democracy is messy. The book is written by Alex Carey, who's not alive anymore, C-A-R-E-Y. And I came across it because Noam Chomsky kept talking about Alex Carey, and he dedicated his book, Manufacturing Consent, to Alex Carey. And I finally got a hold of this book. And the thesis of the book is quite simple. It's that there's been three major political developments in the 20th century. One has been the rise of corporate power. One has been the rise of democratic movements. And the third is the rise of the use of propaganda to protect corporations from democratic movements. So I highly recommend that, Taking the Risk Out of Democracy. And Mark and Don, tell people how they can find out more information about what's happening at UCSC and through the UC system, how they can tap in to the movement that is building now, and how they can maybe even review material online about what has already happened.
Yeah, there is a lot of really great information out on the internet. Of course, we all know that finding that information is the hard part. Those who have engaged in occupations have a website called www.occupyca.wordpress.com. It's a collection of letters in support, our demands, and our statements. It also has chronological info on the occupation in Santa Cruz, as well as solidarity statements for the occupations in Davis and Berkeley. Checkingeducation.com has petitions and links to various informational sites. So it's got petitions you can sign for Schwarzenegger, for the legislature, and for the UCs. The last one, if you are a UC student. I've already shared the essential collection of articles written by Bob Meister, cucfa.org/news/tuition_bonds, bonds.php. That's really a really amazing collection of articles that everyone should know. Also, teachthebudget.org and savecapubliceducation.org are also fantastic websites.
And Don, did you want to add any resources that people can turn to tap into the movement or find out more about what's happening?
Well, Mark covered the ones that I was going to say. Just a quick correction. It's teachthebudgetucsc.org.
Okay.
Not just teachthebudget.org. It's teachthebudget.ucsc.org. And that one, one of the great things about that site is it has actually prepared curricula, teaching tools that one can use for teach-ins, designed by some very, very dedicated and very smart activists and at UCSC graduate student activists. So it was designed originally for teach-ins and in lectures or in sections and study sections, but it has a wider range of applicability, and it's pedagogically oriented in order to take people step by step through the bad decisions, the misplaced priorities over the last 30 years of the UC system, and how it applies specifically to UCSC.
I would also like to point out that there are some websites that are missing from this, and they're missing because they haven't been written or put up yet. And hopefully the Pirate Radio listeners can start to work on this. There, as far as we know, aren't parents organizations dedicated to fighting this. There aren't yet community organizations in California dedicated to fighting this. What we've done on the UC campus is we've had information booths where we set up, where we have cookies that we give out to free, no strings attached to people, and then we go through some of the things that have to do with the budget with the students. But that should probably be happening in town as well. Like, we are attempting to do that, but it would also help if there were community or parents organizations in town doing this, showing how it affects everyone in Santa Cruz. I imagine that some of the local eateries in town will be hard hurt next year once the 32%, once students have 32% less money than they had before. So again, like, this is not just about the UC. It's about the entire state of California, the entire United States, and the entire world. We have a chance with everyone in this community to model something that has never been seen before. We have a chance to reach out and make a difference in the lives of everyone we see, everyone we're stuck in traffic with every day. But that can only be done when people organize together. And we desperately, desperately need all the help we can get.
Maybe we can end with hearing a little about what you two envision for the next period of time for this movement, for democratizing UCSC and the UC system, and trying to reverse some of the recent decisions that have been made. Don, would you like to say something about that?
Yeah, the one thing that I wanted to plug right away is that statewide, there is a planned day of action across public education sectors, but I think could be and should be something across, you know, not just public education, but a statewide day of action on March 4th. So we've got a little while to plan on this. March 4th is an important date because I don't know if your listeners know this or not, but that's the week that K through 12 educators, where administrators have to notify teachers whether or not they're getting pink slipped. So it's a Pink Friday sort of action, because this isn't just something that affects UCSC. It's something that's hitting, you know, especially K through 12, but also the CSU system and the community college system, incredibly hard. So the way that we get stronger is we work together more and more. So where I see us going is, you know, of course, we don't quit, we don't stop at UCSC. Mark Udoff, the president of the UC system, is planning a visit to the Long Marine Lab on Monday, and we intend to throw a party for them, but also we're building towards this statewide day of action to really ring in again that this is not just the UC. You know, on the 17th and 18th, there were a number of actions in CSU schools and community colleges throughout the state, as well as those at the UC, but also something that affects all Californians. So that's March 4th is the day that we're moving, one of the days we're moving forward towards, but, you know, I would expect to see something happening on campus before that day, too.
Real quick, the Mark Udoff visit has been officially canceled, so he will not be in Santa Cruz on Monday. So we can use that time for other things. I would like to say that as much as I shy away from using words like raising awareness, that's what we are going to have to be doing over the course of the next few months in order for March 4th to be a big event. We are going to keep giving out cookies, giving out information. We're going to keep doing as many other tactics as we can to get the word out that we are in the community. We are around. We do have things to say. We can be cogent. We do actually have some idea of how the world could be different. That's basically, there aren't necessarily concrete actions that are being proposed other than March 4th. Everyone's really gearing up for that to be a massive event in Sacramento, as well as in every town and city in California.
And Mark and Don, and earlier we were speaking with Vanessa, I want to thank all of you so very much for joining me this evening on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Thank you for making time to do this, and thank you for your energy and actions thus far in this movement.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having us.
Again, we can do nothing without your listeners, so please, please help us.
All right. Thank you, and I wish you luck. And I hope to hear from you, both of you, again on this program.
Sounds great.
All right. Enjoy yourself. Thank you, Don.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks, Mark.
All right. Thank you so much, Don.
Okay. You are listening to The Great Leap Forward right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM. We also broadcast 24 hours a day on freakradio.org. And this program is on every Wednesday night from 7 to 9 o'clock right here on 101.1 FM, freakradio.org.